welcome into the fourth ever Flagrant 2 podcast with me, Bill Ryder, Forgrave, Mr. Forgrave. What's going on, buddy?
Ooh, baby.
It was a
wedding weekend. Wedding Reed came out Saturday night.
I know you want to tell the story. Don't even care a little bit about Wedding Reed.
I want to tell a story about Wedding Bill,
who's a rare and beautiful bird.
I can dance. I mean, I can do the Russian kick dance.
Yeah, I don't know.
I may or may not rip some pants.
Do dance.
Oh, no. Dancing is like, it's like dancing. It's all effort. It's all energy.
Our listeners must know that during my wedding, Bill Ryder had to pay for his tuxedo pants as he tore them while doing the Russian can-can.
I actually don't think that's true, but okay. True. I mean, it's totally fine if it is. All right, cool.
I was one of the more sober ones at my wedding, which is, I don't know what that means. That's,
I love the prep. I love the prep of the radio show where like Joey and I are like, that's not an interesting story. We should probably just like talk NBA, and Reed's like, okay, yeah, cool.
I'm going for it anyway. It's in my
anything
head.
Else? Anything else you want to talk about? You want to talk about your wife's broken toe?
The rest of the weekend, my wife broke her toe. My niece broke her leg. She's only about 22 months
super,
old.
That's super sad. That's awful.
It really is.
Way to bring up the people listening to the podcast. Any other darkness you want to give us in the world? Did your dog die?
My 14-month-old baby did not sleep the past few nights. So yeah. I'm angry. I come in here angry, Bill.
Well, now people listening are angry, too, because they just wasted 30 seconds of their lives listening to details about yours. do you want to talk some hoops?
I mean, I was kind of hoping to talk more about my weekend, but if we want to talk hoops, I suppose that is what this podcast is about.
The Warriors dropped 142 points, the equivalent of a Bill Ryder butt tear wedding dance in China. And Klay Thompson says that they want to be like Jordan's Bulls. I don't usually make a lot of preseason basketball. For the most part, I don't think it particularly matters. And while I hate the cliche of non-basketball fans that the regular season doesn't count, I do think that applies for the most part to the preseason. But that is not true in a couple examples. This one and the one we'll get to next. I mean, the Warriors, dude, like to do that in preseason, to do that in China, do that on travel, that is more or less a seamless dropping of 140-plus points. I don't think Klay Thompson's off in the fact that these guys can absolutely be what the modern-day, 20-year-later version of what Michael Jordan's Bulls were, which is dominant.
Yeah. I mean, they might – look, it takes time, but they might already be there. I think this team has changed the league more than the Bulls ever did. I mean, the Bulls were – yes, the best team that we've ever seen. But did the entire league completely scrap their plans and change their plans to go after the Bulls? Did they change the way that they play? Did they change everything about the NBA? Not in the way that this team did. I think you're right. I do read into this as a holy crap. This team might break their own single season wins record. They had 23s in the game yesterday, and that's not. It's not absurd to see that happen, you know, four, five, six times this season.
We are going to do over-under numbers later in the show for the Western Conference. A little tease, Golden State. Think about this over-under number. This is where Vegas pegs them right in this range, and Vegas is very good at this. 67.5 as an over. I mean, it was true last year, too. I mean, last year, they actually was a point in Vegas when they announced Durant where they opened at like 69, I think. How many games did they win last year? Did they actually get to 70?
I don't think they did.
67.
Just short.
67. Yeah. That's right. So it was the under. And it felt like the under last year. Hey, anyway, we'll get into it in a little bit. Here's my thing on the Jordan Bulls thing, right? Like, I get the whole idea of, like, change the league, change the game. And I think you're right. I don't think that's what Klay Thompson's talking about. And I don't think that's necessarily the way that you measure this thing. Because what defined Jordan more than whether people reacted to him is whether people were dominated by him, right? Whether he altered behavior to mimic his. I don't think he cared so much about that as altering the league to bend to his will. So for me, you either have to win six over the course of like 10 years, right? And they obviously have two of the last three, or you have to do something unprecedented like win four. I mean, if you win five in a row, you'd get to six. But even win four in a row, I think to get in that range. So if the Warriors, like in this incarnation, right? Let's say that Klay does take less money like he said that he would. And let's say that Draymond sticks around, which I think is actually less certain than any of the other guys. And let's say, like, they continue to roll in guys like Swaggy P or whoever it may be. David West, obviously a different player, who fill the roles off the bench and they continue to like win and be dominant, they could still just win. Let's say, I think it's reasonable they could just win two more, right? If things don't fall the right way, guys get hurt. We'll get to Oklahoma City in a second. Oklahoma City is better than we think. The T-Wolves make a huge jump over the next 3 years. LeBron has a second win, whatever it is. And I think that's a failure by the Jordan standard. I think it's a epic all-time level, but I think Clay having put that out there, and I'm going to say this, Reed, LeBron James is the guy that cited the Jordan comparison early in his career. I did that sit-down interview with him when you and I were at Fox Sports 1, where he said, you know, I asked him, do you want to be better than Jordan? I thought he'd say no. He said, absolutely. And then you get measured by that. And anything short of that is a failure relative to your expectations. So it's a great goal, you know, aim for the stars, land on the moon kind of a thing. But I think if they don't win at least five, I think because of what we expect and what Klay Thompson said, I think it becomes a failure.
Well, and let's bring in the one other aspect of this, and that's nostalgia, especially people our age where Michael Jordan was the defining athlete. You know, you could say maybe of American history, but certainly of our generation. You're fighting nostalgia. It's the same thing that LeBron is doing. I still think LeBron has a chance to pass Jordan. I think it's at this point probably unlikely. Although if you can win a championship with a third franchise, if he moves on to the Lakers, can bring back Showtime, there's another storyline that Jordan didn't have. Jordan didn't have going back to Cleveland. He wouldn't have going to L.A. The problem is fighting nostalgia is going to be really, really hard for these Warriors.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the other thing about Jordan, all right, so Jordan was the face of it, right? So you had this brand, you had this face, you had this, like, thing you could cling to. Now, not that it's, like, not a big problem to have, but who's going to be the – let's say that they win – let's say – I think very reasonable. Let's say they win four of the next six or three of the next five. Who's the face of it? Because I hate it. If the answer is Kevin Durant, and maybe I hate it. Like, it should be Steph Curry's team. Like,
isn't that part of how the Warriors have changed basketball? Is this team? I mean, yes, they have several faces, but there's not. I mean, this is the ultimate team basketball team. Whereas Jordan's Bulls was Jordan's Bulls. This is Steph's Warriors or Draymond's Warriors or not Kevin Durant's Warriors. But there's not one player that you point at, and I think that is part of their achievement. You look at the San Antonio Spurs have done. Like, they're a team above everything.
But yeah, who care? Like, I don't think those guys care. I think it's really interesting. But they care about domination and winning. And if you're going to beat – maybe not. I mean, I guess like Steph and KD both had MVP final-worthy teams. But the way we look back at history, regardless of like how team-oriented any team is, we always pick somebody. That's human nature to be like the flag bearer of that team.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's interesting, right?
Like, I don't know if there is one guy with this team. And I think that is what makes this team so unique and so interesting.
They also – I mean, here's the other thing. Like – Jordan's Bulls had Jordan, as well as obviously Pippen and a whole bunch of great players. But this team has Joey, producer Joey, worked in the NBA for 10 years. He can like fact check us a little bit here. Am I being a little too captive of the moment when I say that the Warriors have three of the best five shooters of all time?
Oh, no, I don't think – well, when it's all said and done, absolutely.
Right.
I think
three or four.
I think they already have two in Steph and KD. I don't even think there's a question. I think Clay still has a way to go to be in the top five, but absolutely as good of a shooter as he is, he can finish in the top five all time for sure.
I mean, he – I'm trying to remember this. Didn't he like score like 40 points in a quarter once?
I think it was 37.
Yeah. 37. I mean, so Reed, to your point, I guess I'm coming around to the fourth grade perspective, like, and I don't think it matters, like, why. It just matters what, but the why is the reason it could happen. Like, they are so dominant as an offense, as we, I mean, 142 preseason points, obviously. They're also an amazing defensive team, and I don't personally buy this narrative that this sort of, like, corrective rewriting history, that Durant was always great on defense, and he's just getting to show it in Golden State. I think it's more of a like taking his game to their level, but whatever the reason, Kevin Durant's been pretty good defensively too. I mean, they are, and he's long, like they don't have any holes.
One of the things that I feel we don't speak about enough with this team is how well they've done the draft the past few years. I mean, look, the fact that they got Clay where they got him, where they got Steph where they got him was so impressive, but getting Jordan Bell in the second round this year, buying into that pick from the Bulls, is huge. This is the perfect guy for their system, the energy guy, the defensive guy to come off the bench. I think he's awesome. And the fact that they got Patrick McCaw a couple years ago, that was a huge pick. I thought he was fantastic when we saw, you know, bursts of him in the playoffs. So the fact that they keep being able to, I mean, it's like what we said with the Spurs the past, 10, 15 years. It's like the fact that they can get these guys at places where other teams have passed them over. And when the Spurs used to pick them, when the Warriors picked them, you're like, oh, that guy's going to be awesome.
Yeah, dude. All right. So we'll get into Warriors over under later. 142 season points in a preseason game is silly. Let's move on to another team that I think, like, their preseason win last night says something. Oklahoma City, and I think, you know, obviously the new incarnation with Melo, with Paul George, Russ played. It is an incredible accomplishment, even in the preseason, to go out there against a powerhouse like Melbourne United. And even though you're limited with NBA talent against a team like that, to barely win the game. I won't swear because I know Joey's to bleep it out. Dude, I know it's a preseason game, and I think I'm going to have my cake and eat it too. I'm going to hedge. I know they can go both ways. I think people are gravely underestimating the under possibilities, the not even the floor, the dank and dark basement that this team could be if the things that manifested themselves in that game do over the course of a season. How the you know what do these guys barely beat Mel? I mean, I don't want to hate on powerhouses like Josh Boone and David Barlow and, you know, Andre Dawkins coming off the bench for eight. What the hell, Forgrave?
That's a problem. It's a problem. I tend to, you know, we talk about how much do you read into preseason games. I tend to look, this clearly ball movement is going to be a problem for this team, but I don't read into this game as much as we could. I'm not pressing the panic button right now. Here's two reasons why. One reason is, look, they're still adjusting. Melo came over, what, 2-3 weeks ago? This is going to be a team that takes time to figure out who they are and how they do it. And number two is, look, I know these aren't exactly marquee names, but Patrick Patterson, Alex Abrines did not play last night. Those are, they shot 25% from three, but those guys, I think, are big parts of how this team is going to score. I think this team is going to have problems for sure. I think there will be adjustments, and I think I will probably take the under on them. But I believe in time, as in by playoff time, this team will have figured it out, gotten a rhythm, and figured out what they're supposed to be.
I'm glad you brought up Patrick Patterson, that seminal agent of excellence in the National Basketball Association, because he is considered the best player off the bench. You just brought up how important he is to that team. There are some OKC Melo lovers who don't believe in efficiency, who think they have a chance to be the team most likely to beat the Warriors, thus saying that they're good enough to win an NBA championship. And I will just counter with, not that long ago when Joey's beard was even shorter and Reed, you and I were much, much thinner, the best player off the bench for the Oklahoma City Thunder was a guy named James Harden, and they lost in five in the NBA Finals. This team's not very good, and I don't care how long you've been with the team, I don't care how many adjustments you have to make. Carmelo Anthony, 5 of 17, is not an anomaly. It is more of the ugly same. Paul George, 4 for 13, not an anomaly. It's what happens when you have three egomaniacs on the same team. And the glaring stat for me, the thing that makes me really, really nervous, Russell Westbrook took only 10 shots. Now, he made three of them, right on track with his efficiency from last year. So good job. Good job there. I don't know, dude. Like, you're right. Like, there's lots of time. It's one game. It's a microcosm. But I do think in some situations you get flashes of reality. Here's why I think this game means more than other ones. If it were against Utah or against the Heat or against anybody else, Melo, Russ, PG, Billy Donovan, even Sam Presti to their friends on social media, at the bar, with the guys around the office, walking around Oklahoma City, could be like, ah, it's preseason. You cannot say that about Melbourne, the powerhouse that is Melbourne United. There is an embarrassment level if you lose to that team, which means as that game continued to be close, there was a different kind of pressure you don't feel in a preseason game. And I think how they responded is indicative of how they will when things matter like it does, or you can't lose to a team from Australia.
Yeah, I mean, see him scoring 16 points in the fourth quarter when they're up against that embarrassment is – certainly a red flag. I just think it's, you know, just like frankly, the Warriors to some extent at the beginning last year when they were trying to meld Kevin Durant into that team, the Heat that first year with the big three, this team's going to take some time to mesh. Yes, it's a problem when you're not meshing against Melbourne United. But look, I'm going to take a wait and see approach. I still am high on this team. I still think they can be the one, them or the Rockets, I suppose, the one team that could, in theory, maybe challenge the Warriors in the West, although I think the chance of that is still not too great. But yeah, I'd say be patient with this team, man. Like, it's going to be interesting. You're right. There is dumpster fire potential, especially with Melo.
There really is. By the way, their biggest lead of the game, 10 points. 10 points. Not
ideal. Great.
Not ideal. All right. Another team that I kind of doubt, and I don't want to go too negative and too hard, but another team that I kind of doubt. I don't know if I doubt. I'm a little worried about the Rockets, right? They were the 3 seed last year. They had a remarkable, remarkable run. James Harden was incredible. And wow, I think a lot of that was the system. I think it's worth noting. He scored a lot more points than Steve Nash ever did per game in a season. And he had the same number of assists per game that Nash had both of his MVP seasons. He was better than Steve Nash in both of Steve Nash's MVP seasons, including one where he clearly stole an MVP from Kobe Bryant at his prime. So, like, my point is, Harden was pretty amazing. And you add in Chris Paul. Now, I get it. Like, Harden played with no all-stars. You have to have talent. I just worry about sort of the ego dynamic of Harden, of CP3, and of Mike D'Antoni. And Kevin McHale had a really interesting, I thought, overly candid comment about Harden that I'm sure you saw, where basically McHale said, Harden's not a leader. And two things struck me about it. One, and you know this, Reed, being on the sport, guys will never tell the truth, very rarely tell the truth about people they play with. Like, I love having athletes on. I love interviewing athletes. But I cannot tell you how many times I have talked to an athlete in a green room, like famous ones, who will say one thing and then do another on the air. Like, I remember I broke that story on Chris Paul 3-4 years ago about, what was it?
Oh,
about,
yeah.
Me and DeAndre
the
hate each other.
Between him and Jordan, yeah.
I got called into FS1 to debate it. I won't sell the guy out, but a very well-known former NBA player was in the green room, and I saw him, and I'm like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, dude, that was a great story on Chris. I'm like, oh, I thought you and Chris were pretty tight. He goes, we are, but you nailed it. Totally right. He's just hard to play with. He's been awful to DeAndre. Like, great job. I'm like, oh, thanks. What are you doing here? What are you doing here for FS1? Oh, I'm going on the air to debate with you about the story. This is a true story. I'm like, you're what? He's like, yeah, I'm going to debate with you. I'm like, wait. You're going to go out there and say that I was wrong? He's like, yeah. I'm like, but you just said I was right. He goes, yeah, I can't do that. Chris will get mad. He went out there, and then he played the you didn't play card. I'm sitting there on live TV. Like, so my point is, when Kevin McHale says that, to me, whatever his motives, whatever his frustrations, the fact he got fired from there, didn't work out, to me, it has to be 1,000 times. If not true, he certainly believes it 1,000 times more strongly than most people when they make a comment, because the guys that played and coached try to keep it in the family, right? To the point where they would congratulate guys like you and I in private and then tell people that we're wrong in public. So keep that in mind, and I think it explains Harden's pretty pissed off response where, and you can hear in a gym, they caught up to him and asked about his former coach saying he is not a leader.
He's a clown, honestly. You know, I did anything and everything he asked me, you know, to do. I try to lead this team every single day since I stepped foot here in Houston. You know, but to go out here and just, you know, downplay my name when, you know, honestly, he's never taught me anything, you know, to be a leader. But I've done a great job, you know, I think, in the organization, my coaches, you can ask any of those guys, you know, how I've worked extremely hard every single day to better, you know, obviously be a basketball player, but be a leader as well, different types of leaders as well. So to go on air and downplay my name like that, it shows his character. And I usually don't go back and forth on social media with anybody or, you know, with interviews, but, you know, something to stand up for myself and, you know, there it is. But
all right, Reed, to quote your favorite, I know you style yourself like a highfalutin intellectual, to quote your favorite series of books, Twilight, are you a McHale guy or are you a Harden guy?
can both be right in this scenario?
Maybe.
Like that's honestly how I feel there. First of all, this is some high quality beef right here. Like I love this sort of beef where not just talking about like, oh, dude can't shoot from three, but the dude is a low character guy. That's beautiful. We need more of this in the NBA. Look, I think what Kevin McHale was saying was basically, you know, especially on defense, when Harden, his defense is highlighted on a monthly basis on like laugh track videos on Deadspin. I mean, come on. It's not what a leader does. And I think Chris Paul is going to, you know, frankly, be pretty vocal, as Chris Paul often is. And
yeah, I'm not sure that's leadership either. That's the other, like, I mean, that's, yeah.
It's another type of leadership. And the other side, I mean, it's not like Kevin McHale. Look, stud player, Hall of Famer, not like his executive leadership from the front office or as a coach has been particularly distinguished, starting with the Joe Smith signing that absolutely tanked my hometown Minnesota Timberwolves for the better part of two decades, at least began that process. And you know, not a particularly distinguished career as a coach. So I think McHale might both be a clown, and especially on defense, James Harden's probably not a leader.
I don't think he's a clown, and here's why. The guy is paid to give his opinion on television. And for him to lie or to pretend it's not true because he owes some sort of bull omerta code to a guy that he used to coach is garbage. Like, you and I are trained as journalists, and while players and coaches, that's not their background, that's not their inclination, and they're not accustomed to being criticized or socially isolated over what they say or do, I respect the guy for keeping it real, and I doubt very much he's making that up. Like, he describes, McHale describes in the quote where Harden, we're talking about defense, you're like you said, and everybody would like slump their shoulders. It may not be particularly kind, but I'm not sure that's his job. Everybody loves Barkley, right, for just crushing people. And Barkley had a falling out with Jordan over his honesty. So it doesn't ring untrue to me. And I'll also say this, like, I understand why Harden's angry. Guys are really thin skinned these days. I mean, they just, LeBron gets, you know, his feelings hurt all the time. Kevin Durant is treated like some kind of god in Oklahoma City, and then he gets like one negative headline. He goes to the All-Star game and through tears, like, I don't like the media. Okay, the tears part isn't true. And that's fine. Like, nobody has sympathy for us, and they shouldn't. But I do think that sort of like thin skinned nature, there's a difference between some of the guys back in the day. Like, what? Kobe
but
and some
clown
of those
part,
guys.
The clown part can be completely separate from whether he's telling the truth or not telling the truth. Like, Kevin McHale, not like clown or not, not a good GM, not a good front office guy, not a good coach. I mean, he got fired after 11 games after being a 2 seed the year before. That's not something that a leech
clown
coach is going to be.
I don't know if he's a clown. I mean, it's interesting. Like,
yeah, clown's kind of a harsh word, actually.
I guess it depends on the context. I think you're more of a clown, and there's a lot of them out there, if you talk in private around, you know, former player, former athlete about what actually goes on, and then you go on TV or you go on social media or whatever, you go on radio, and you say you know is not true because you don't want those guys to be mad at you when you see them, like, out for dinner. And I've seen it. Like, I've
that
seen
that. All the time, man. That is the business. It's politics. It's sports. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know who never shies away from controversy, who only lives in the truth, who is basically the Winston Churchill of the NBA today, a man who should be at the forefront of every movement?
Go right.
Lance Stephenson.
Oh, Lance. Joey!
Joey's a good producer.
Joey!
Joey!
Joey's good.
Born ready.
Here comes, guys. Oh, one more time.
Let's try it again, Joey.
Born ready.
One more time.
Born ready.
So, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, you should absolutely subscribe on iTunes. Give us a great review, and we have an opening for a producer, so you can apply at SportsWriter on Twitter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. We are going to keep our movement alive to get Lance Stephenson as a top vote getter so that he can be the captain of the Eastern Conference team. And every time he picks someone, he gets a blow in their ear. Reed, you in for this still?
Am I in for this? It's going to be the highlight of the NBA season, my friend. Let's make it happen.
So, can I give you a little bit of a little too much info moment on living in New York?
I'm hoping that's different than
LA. LA, air conditioned car. I would drive from point A to point B. I'd have air conditioning. It was great, right? And as you know, I am often working somewhere between 12 and 15 hour days through my course of various responsibilities. And in LA, it wasn't a big deal. What I learned in New York, a little too much info, is that it's kind of hot out. You're on the train. You're in the base. You're in the subway. You're sweating. So I bring a change of clothes with me in my, you know, my backpack when I'm going around town, when I'm like out for 12, 13 hours. And I might even bring a couple pairs of underwear just in case I need to. And it's what's reinforced the fact that you want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable. And the perfect balance is hard to find. That's why I don't sacrifice style or comfort. That's why you should read. I know you're already on it, but the folks listening should check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world, whether you travel around New York with MeUndies in your backpack or you just have it at your house. It really is. It's the ultimate feel. Good undies when you want to, you know, when you want to feel naked, but you're not naked. That's what it is, right? Like for the guys, the MeUndies diamond seam pouch cradles, you know, even reeds. Like there's different sizes. Your jewels and get yourself the support it needs without feeling too tight. So to get your 20% off free shipping and their 100% satisfaction guarantee, and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/NBA. That's MeUndies.com/NBA. It's a limited offer. So what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed my life. It's time to let MeUndies change yours. MeUndies.com/NBA. And Reed and I, you and I got a couple pairs of free undies from MeUndies because they sponsor the podcast. And I like the first, I'm a weirdo, dude. Like underwear is so hard to find. I ordered like 20 pairs when I got home. Like after the first day, I was like, oh my God. It really did it. Like,
there are things in life that it's like you don't realize you're missing until you have it. And then you're like, yeah. Oh my God. And right. It's MeUndies. I'm sitting here right now. Luxuriating in my large, what is it? Diamond shaped. What is it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you wouldn't. It doesn't apply to you. Don't worry about it. you're right. There's things in life you don't know you need to have. MeUndies underwear and Reed Forgrave talking about his awful weekend at the start of a podcast. All right, let's move on to over unders. Let's do it. The $1 million duck. That's awesome. Thank you for that, Joseph. That's great stuff. So fun. By the way, Reed, on the radio show, I would pretend that like Joey's making me sound weirder than I am. But on the radio show I do at CBS Sports Radio on weeknights, which you are always on as my friend and podcast partner, they play this thing called Rejoins where they like clip things you've actually said and they come back from break with it. And every time I'm just like, I am such a weirdo. Like,
and then you keep going. And then you keep going.
What did I say that? Like I'm singing. It's really bad. All right. So let's do quick Western Conference over under numbers for Grave. Do you want to stop? I've got the list here. Do you want you decide? Do you want to stop at the most likely or the least likely? Want to start with the worst teams and go from there?
Let's start with the best teams.
Let's go. You want to go start with the
worst
best?
Teams? I don't care. I'm not a diva, dude. Everyone knows that I'm not the diva of this podcast, right?
It's really
right,
funny. It's funny. I don't know if we do know that.
It's like the surprise.
The $1 million duck. Diva. You are Surprise Diva. That should be the name of your book, Surprise Diva.
Diva. That's
when
not bad.
When does your New York Times Magazine story come out?
This Sunday. This right, Sunday. Well. That's what made last week such...
Nobody cares.
You don't hear about my week.
Yeah,
it is turned in. It is to the printer. It is running next week, my friend.
Not a sports story. Politics story. Reed is a Renaissance man. All right, Reed. And Joey, you going to get in this too?
Yeah.
Joey's a talking dude.
I'll get in as much as you guys want me to give my opinion. Let me know. You tell me.
Okay. The people want a limited response with a number, an over and under.
That's what I'll give them.
It's perfect. Seven words per team,
right? Hey, three words.
Ball ready.
That's true. You get 7 words before you have to pronounce over under per team.
Done.
That's your over under number. All
done.
Right. Phoenix Suns. 20. This is compliments of Westgate. Phoenix Suns. 28.5. Phoenix Suns, 28.5. Jumping anybody.
I am going to take the under on this team because I believe this is one of the most likely teams in the NBA to tank in the last year, where tanking is going to be, I guess, more viable this year than it will be a year from now, how they're changing those rules. I like what this team did in the offseason. I think Josh Jackson could end up being the best.
Josh Jackson.
Alec Peters is a sneaky good draft pick in the second round. But this team is so young, and we saw what they did last year, sitting Bledsoe, the healthy scratch for the last month or two of the season. I think this team is aiming to go under, and that is why I'm going to pick the under. And I still am high on their future 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going strong under. I feel very confident that it's the under. I think you're absolutely right. And there are two or three guys. Really, you're the draft expert. Three guys in this draft who are worthy, many would say, of tanking. Right? Like there are three dudes if you include the kid from Europe.
Yeah, I mean, you could say as many as five, but I think three for sure tanks with Michael Porter Jr., Luka Doncic, and and Marvin Bagley, of course, for Duke.
Really quickly, best player in draft.
Most people say Marvin Bagley. I'm going to say Michael Porter Jr. because I betray my Mizzou bias.
I'm with you on that. Under. Joseph?
I'm going to go under by a little bit. I could go either way, but I'll go under by
like nine words. Yeah. I'm just kidding. You're going under by a little bit?
By a tiny bit. I mean, I love Devin Booker. It's just like, he guy had 70 points. I don't care how many shots he took, he had 70 points.
He's
in
so
game
inefficient, dude.
How do you like him on defense, Joe?
He can, yeah. But they're going to score points. If they play in the NBA, if you play remotely hard on a lot of those midseason games, you can steal some games here and there. If they have a young team, if they play hard, they can win some games. But yeah, it's probably more like, it's probably 26, 27 wins.
All right, so young teams that tend to win games when they shouldn't almost always do it at the beginning of the season, the first two or three weeks. If you look at the numbers, they come out fighting. Veteran teams are a little slow to the ball. So let's just like see how they're going to look once it's actually the regular season. As I hear on the Google machine attempt to pull up their actual schedule and see. By the way, about Devin Booker, do you buy him as a superstar or do you buy him Joey as a high-volume guy on a bad team? Because, Reed, I'm not as sold on him as other people. I think he's good. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's like a superstar.
He's not
he's not gonna be a top 10 player.
Not a superstar, but he could be your second best player on a good playoff team.
I think he's an all-star. I think he's an all-star 2 or 3 years from now. I like Devin Booker a lot. I think he's one of the best. He will become one of the best scorers in the NBA. And having Josh Jackson next to him is going to really help his defense. So I mean, or at least cover up his defense. So yeah, I'm a fan of Devin Booker.
What you will learn is that Reed likes everybody and I like nobody. All right, Portland opening game in Phoenix. I mean, I'm going to give Portland that win. I know this is not – I'm not going to go through every schedule. I'm a geek. Lakers, Phoenix. I mean, I don't know. Portland, Lakers, Clippers, Kings, Jazz. They can win a couple games early on.
Start
they play really
early.
Five. They're not going to start. I love that. all right, Sacramento Kings, 28.5, Forgrave.
I like the fact that they brought in veterans to help with the youngsters. I love the De'Aaron Fox pick. I think it's going to take some time. I love De'Aaron Fox. I think he could be the best player in this draft. I'm going to take the over on this
team. You just said that about Josh Jackson.
I said he'd be the best.
You love everybody, dude. You love everybody.
Yeah, I mean, they're 28.5. I'd take a slight over on this team. I think the Kings had especially on the sliding scale that is the Sacramento Kings, they had a remarkable offseason.
All right, so I like De'Aaron Fox. I think his development's going to take a lot of time. I think because of the position he plays, that whatever sort of like struggles he's have will manifest themselves with this team. They're also still the Kings, and I spent a lot of time around that organization. It's been a while, but like I used to be around them all the time when the Maloofs owned them. Guys that I'm friends with, I know people in the organization, I know people that used to be in the organization. It is an absolute culture disaster, and doesn't matter what you do for a living, you know this wherever you're listening. If you work in a good culture, it's easier to thrive. If you work in a bad culture, it is hard to succeed. I think it's a very, very close call, but I am going to go I'm gonna go just barely under.
He's such a hater.
I'm going to keep track of these, Reed, and we're going to like hold ourselves accountable at the end of the year.
As we should. Joey, chime in, bro.
I'm going under. I'm going strong under, actually, on this one. I was high on them bringing in vets to teach the young guys. But when I look at the vets, I'm just not sure, like, are Zebo and George Hill going there to teach these young guys, or are they trying to play? I mean, like, are they trying to give it up already? I mean, Vince Carter played a lot last year. He's old, but are these guys going there to teach these guys? I mean, I think there's going to be a point in this year where they're going to go young. And then what happens in the locker room if these guys aren't actually there to buy in and teach these young guys? I don't think they are.
And Joe, you just won $1 million duck award. Give yourself $1 million duck. Give yourself $1 million.
$1 million duck.
Not even sure you're right, but you brought that insider NBA knowledge. You've been in those locker rooms. You've been the guy that has to go and actually like clean their MeUndies. No, that's not true.
not in that. Maybe in college, not in the NBA.
Okay. Did you really in college?
I helped. I had to pick up towels and stuff in the locker room. You gotta do what you gotta do.
I was in a locker room once with a guy, and he was like, I think I went to high school with him. It was real awkward. He was like literally like picking up guys under, like, Bill.
I never did laundry, but players they're called loops. They put all their dirty clothes on a loop and just throw it on the floor. When I was a manager at Florida State for the basketball team, I would collect loops like after practices or games and give them to the equipment manager.
I love that. All right. Los Angeles Lakers, 33.5, Mr. Forgrave.
Ooh, I think that's kind of dead on, to be honest. Look, Lonzo Ball, as we all know, is likely the best player in this draft.
That took me a second.
Took you a second. Look, I mean, I like this team's future a ton. I don't think they're there yet. So I guess I'm going to go under by a little bit. But, just because I think they'll take a while, including Lonzo, who I love.
So I've got Brandon Ingram on my most improved player prediction. I know we'll do that later, but I think he's going to take a huge leap forward. I do not believe Lonzo Ball is the superstar that his father and many people say that he is, but I do think he's one of these guys that makes everybody around him better. I think he's a winner, and I think he's a locker room creator in terms of good chemistry. And I was watching, don't ask me why, I guess I just hate myself, but I was watching the Knicks and the Nets preseason game last night. And watching D'Angelo Russell play reminded me what I had heard from people who knew him at Ohio State, and certainly like I was in L.A. around that Lakers organization. People don't like playing with him, and it doesn't matter how talented you are. And this is true in our business too, Reed. If people don't like being around you, it manifests itself in the finished product. I think his exit is a huge net positive. I think Ingram's going to be a whole lot better. I think Julius Randle is grossly underrated nationally, especially with they're going to go small. That Mozgov signing from, a year or two ago was so ridiculous to put with that head coach, with Walton, with what he wants to do. There's no Mitch anymore. They have a new GM, obviously, in Magic, president of operations, and in Pelinka as the actual GM. So I think Luke Walton's going to be highly liberated to do what he wants to do and not justify bad signings from a couple years ago. I don't think they'll win a ton of games, and I reckon they went 26 last year, 27, something in that range. They won 26 games last year, so I'm basically banking on an eight-win swing, and that is a huge, huge swing. But I lived in L.A. I'm going to go a little bit sycophantic. I believe Lonzo is going to bring out what the Lakers already had and already can do. I think they'll have some rough stretches, and I think a lot of it hinges on my belief in Ingram being markedly better, but I'm going over. Like 36 wins sounds right to me, 35.
That's a lot. That's a lot, but That's sound judgment by you, Mr. Ryder. Lonzo Ball, I mean, when you think about it, when we talk about D'Angelo Russell, basically the exact opposite as far as the locker room guy. So it'll be interesting, the chemistry of this team.
Joseph?
Yeah, I'm with you, Bill. I think I'm a little bit over. I think actually I'm with both. I think 33 is probably 33.5 is probably the
close
number. But if I have to pay, I'm going to go a little bit over. I just like looking at the roster, they also – they have some interesting lineup possibilities. Randle could come off the bench. They signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who can shoot it.
Yep.
Dang can still shoot it a little bit. The kid, you guys talked about it on the last show, Kyle Kuzma's looked good.
He looks so good.
He can shoot it. Brook Lopez can shoot. I mean, he can stretch the floor a little bit. They still have Clarkson coming off the bench. I mean,
I like Clarkson a lot. MIT.
They're not going to win a lot. They're not super talented, but you know, they're interesting enough to where I could see them getting to that 33, 34, 35 win mark.
I also, this is where I'm always at odds with the guys that do what you and I do, Reed, and more in line with the guys who played. Like, as much as I buy into analytics and sabermetrics in baseball, I think chemistry and good feeling, like goodwill matters too. I think that joy is a thing where I think in the past there was no momentum for the Lakers because of D'Angelo. I think that Lakers team's going to be such a joyous place to be compared to last year, that they're going to get on little runs they shouldn't. They're going to win two or three games. They're going to win coin flip games they didn't win last year. And they're not going to be beating teams like the Warriors on a regular basis. But after the top four for me in the West, there's a big drop off. So I think to beat the fifth or sixth best team in the Western Conference is not the same challenge it was 2 years ago. So I think they're going to sneak a couple wins that you wouldn't see coming. All right. Dallas Mavericks, 35.5. Mr. Reed Forgrave.
This one is fascinating to me because this all hinges on Dennis Smith Jr., who could win.
The best player in the rookie of the year.
Probably the best player in the draft. Probably. I mean, honestly, like, probably the odds-on favorite to win rookie of the year. I'm not sure what Vegas says, but he's got to be right up there, especially when we saw his summer league. But he's also such an inconsistent player. We're going to see him have 12 assists, 9 turnover games, which is why I'm going to take the under on this team. If Nerlens Noel is healthy and if Dennis Smith keeps playing, can play consistently at that level he played in summer league, that's going to look like a really bad prediction on my part. But yeah, I'm going to take under for the Mavs.
All right. So Mr. Levin,
I'm going to go under. I don't really like this team. And I think they were, well, first of all, they're off to a bad start. Seth Curry's hurt. I think they were planning on him having a pretty an expanded role this year in their offense. So we'll see when he comes back. Dirk's 700 years old. How much can he play? I'm not high on Nerlens Noel.
I know you're not.
I mean, Harrison Barnes is a good player, but if he's going to be your best player, I don't know if you're going to win a lot of games. So I'm going to go under. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. will be fine. He'll be good. But I don't think he's good. I don't think they're going to be good enough in the West to get 35.
Last year they won 33 games, right? I think Rick Carlisle is one of the top five coaches in the game, and that's been obscured the last few years because he's coaching a really bad basketball team, and bad teams tend to win games sometimes they should not, right? Well-coached teams coached by great coaches. I tried earlier to talk myself into the over. I'm trying here on the Flagrant 2 that you should subscribe to on iTunes and give us a great review on iTunes to talk myself into the over. And I'm going to go the under. It's not a good roster.
No, it's not.
It's not a good roster. And I don't buy Dennis Smith Jr. as much as other people. I gotta go under. This one's interesting. Memphis Grizzlies, a little bit different Memphis Grizzlies team. The over-under number, 37.5. They won 43 games last year. Vegas sees him taking a 6-game dive. Mr. Forgrave.
This is, I think, one of the most intriguing, non-top-tier teams in the league. I see this as a team that is going to try really hard to make the playoffs. And then when they realize they are not going to make the playoffs, somewhere around February, I can see them making some big trades. Shedding some salary and tanking. So, which is why I am going to take the under, even though I like a lot of things about this roster. I like the fact that they're taking like very low risk contracts with Tyreke Evans, Ben McLemore. But ultimately I think this team just does not have it. And when they realize that they don't have it, they're going to mail it in.
Mr. Levin.
I'm going to go with the over. I think this number is a little low for them. I still think they're a 40-win team. I don't think they're a playoff team anymore, but I still think they're better than 37 wins because, I mean, Mike Conley probably still, even with the big contract he got last year, probably still a little underrated at the point guard position. Marc Gasol is still a really good player if he stays healthy. They brought back to Michael Green, which looked like they may not. He had a good year for them last year. I think Fizdale is a really good coach.
Do you think he's a good coach?
I do.
I was around him in Miami. He was an interesting guy.
I think he's a good coach. I mean, he's not, doesn't have a lot to work with. The cupboard is a little bare there after, Gasol and Conley. But I think the 39, 40 games.
We really need a take that for data drop, to be able to, every time we throw out a statistic, please.
I want to take the under, but I can't because 37.5 is really low. And I started looking at this. I can't take the under on Memphis and Dallas. For me, it was like a one or the other. Like one of those teams have to sort of be able to get some of those wins, including against each other. I'm going to go over. I think Conley is one of the most underrated players in the league. They have said, doesn't mean it's true, they have said that Gasol is untouchable. And if they trade him, it won't be till February anyway. I think he'll stick around. Especially with, and maybe this doesn't matter, but with Zebo going to Sacramento and just what he meant to that town, like, I don't know if you like want to get rid of two of your core guys in the same season in a city where it's the only professional sports team and there's sort of a different It's a different thing. It's not a similar market. I'm going to go over. I'm going to feel really, really shit about it. New Orleans. Oh, I'm sorry, Joe. I keep swearing. You have to go find these.
time for
I'm a swearer. What can I say? It's some bullshit. New Orleans. Yeah, I did it again. New Orleans Pelicans. Nolans all. Pelicans read Forgrave 39.5.
I have no idea. I really have no idea with this team. I don't think we got the true sense of what the Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins pairing last year. I don't think we got a real sense of what that's going to be. I tend to not have that much faith in it. With Rondo getting hurt, that certainly doesn't help. I think in a very uncertain way, I'm going to take the under, and I'm going to be really sad about it because I really want that front court pairing to work. I just don't think it's gonna, which is really unfortunate. This franchise has, I think, completely squandered one of the best players in the NBA over the past several seasons, and it's a shame. But I'm going to take the under on this. It makes me sad, so sad.
Reed loves every player in the NBA and hates every team.
Hates every team. take all the unders, and every single player is going to win Rookie of the Year and MVP.
It's a paradox. Mr. Joseph Levin, producer of this show, what say you?
I'm in. Anthony Davis, Boogie, I love it. I loved it last year, and it didn't work, so I'm going to buy it for year two. They're just
sound like a good gambler.
Too much talent between those two guys. They're not going to win 50 games, but I think they're going to win more than 39.5. Also, a lot depends on what happens with Rondo. Now they're saying he might need sports hernia surgery. If they could fit him in there with Drew at the two, they still don't have a small forward, but maybe they'll go small and put more shooting on the floor around those guys. Anthony Davis is so good. If they can figure out how to make Boogie work next to him, I think they're a 40 to 45 win team.
My analysis is the following: Anthony Davis plus Boogie equals 40 wins. Over. Over. I think it's an absolute over. They did not play particularly well together at the beginning last year after the trade deadline, but there were some amazing sort of virtuoso moments where both of those guys had ridiculous games. And, you know, as much as like Rondo is that's a kick in the you know what, he may be back. They're so talented. They're not well coached. I'm trying to talk about something under.
I mean, this team might have among the worst depth in the NBA. And that's another issue.
Over.
All right. Fair.
I mean, I don't feel super great. You know what? No, I'm going to talk myself into feeling super, super great about it. All right, over. All right, Forgrave, are you ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
I feel so bad for this organization, and there's nothing you can do about it, but they were on the way to something really special. Quinn Snyder, a guy that I covered a little bit when I was a newspaper writer in Kansas City when he was at Mizzou, has resurrected his career. I think he's a really good coach. The Utah Jazz were really good last year. They were really fun last year. They won 51 games last year. They were good enough to supplant the Clippers as that sort of perennial top three or four team in the Western Conference. And then Gordon Hayward went to Boston to play with his college coach. Utah is over on a number, according to Vegas, all the way down to 40.5, Mr. Forgrave.
I'm taking the over here. Look, obviously, losing Hayward is huge and sucks. But considering that they lost him, I think this team had a really, really good offseason. I really like the Rubio trade. I know he's far from the perfect player, but I think he will play really well with Quinn Snyder. Donovan Mitchell is a steal in this draft from where they got him. Tony Bradley, not there yet, but another guy who I think will prove a long-term late first-round steal. Look, Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in the NBA, and a lot of this is on his shoulders. But especially with 40.5, give me the over on this team. I think this team is fundamentally solid, well coached, and has maybe not a couple of stars, but certainly one star in Gobert, and then a bunch of really nice pieces around them.
Yep, I think I'm with you on this. I am going over. I think they're the new Trailblazers. I think like 40, 41, 42 wins every year with this current incarnation makes sense. And I'm going to believe in the 41 rather than the 40. I think Vegas is always just right on the correct number. I'm going over by a little bit, Joseph.
I just can't get past who's going to score for this team.
Who do you hate? Who do you hate? What point guard do you hate most in the NBA?
Oh, my God. Well, you know. I mean, I can't. Ricky Rubio. I don't get it.
He hates him.
There's nothing there. He does nothing for me. He's a good passer. Great. Congratulations, Ricky Rubio. Can't score.
Great passer.
Can't score. Can't shoot. Doesn't help space the floor. He doesn't. What is it? He defends a little bit. That's fine. They're going to be a good defensive team regardless. Rodney Hood is going to have to. An 11 loss drop off is a huge amount. So it's hard for me to go under, but I don't know how this team scores.
Are you going under?
Unless Quinn Snyder really figures out a way to get the ball moving with him. I'm going under. Yeah, maybe Quinn Snyder plays. I don't know. Can he still shoot? I don't know.
All right. Reed Forgrave. The Portland Trail Blazers, perennially in the 41, 42, 43, are 42 and a half. This is the team that I really like for a mediocre team. What say you?
Love the backcourt, man. Don't know what I think about the rest of the team, but love the backcourt. I'm going to take slightly over on this team. I think Caleb Swanigan, adding him in the draft, was just a really nice pickup. The type of guy who can just get out there and get after it, who understands his role as a rebounder, one of the things that this team needs. So, yeah, I like this team. I don't think they're going to go much over 43, so I pick them at like 44 or 45. But, yeah, give me the over for these guys.
Would I automatically lose if I took a push? Is it possible to win half a game? It's not, is it? Just trying to understand the whole. Yeah, I mean, I am such a – A, I think Neil O'Shea is like a – I'm not sure he's underrated in NBA circles, but I don't think a lot of like everyday NBA fans know who that guy is. I think he's a incredible general manager, and every time he makes a drafting decision, it's pretty brilliant. He's the guy that facilitated the Chris Paul trade to the Clippers. He is the guy that scouted himself, Damian Lillard, and CJ McCollum and brought them in. Reed, I've told you this story that like the great GMs are the ones who scout themselves. Joey, you and I have talked about it too. And back in my traveling days when I used to write for FoxSports.com as a columnist and travel, 25 days a month? On multiple occasions going in and out of Kansas City's airport or where I lived at the time or other places, I would bump into Neil O'Shea on some early, awful, bullshit 5 a.m., you know, Southwest, like terrible flight where you're just like you hate your life when your alarm goes off. And so I believe in the guys that he brings in. I had this weird, like, in fact, I think Harkless is going to be, like, as a role player, really good this year. Like, that's my, like, candidate.
It qualifies as weird.
Yeah, Marisa. So I'm going to go just barely, all which is to say I think they're really well coached. I'm going to go over by a little bit, and I'm going to say of those 43 wins I'm banking on, a good 9 of them shouldn't happen and happen because of Damian Lillard Joseph.
I can't believe you didn't even bring up your guy, Bill. Nurkic.
Oh, that's true. You're right.
They're going over. They were 14-6 last year with Nurkic.
Yeah, awesome.
They were disappointing last year to me. I thought Lillard actually had a good year, but as a team, I thought they were going to be much better last year. When they got Nurkic, they played way better. If he stays healthy.
Now I hate myself.
CJ McCollum is turning into a stud. He can really score. I think I'm going over. I like this team.
All right. A team that I once wrote about, and I predicted this very demise because Chris Paul was a cultural cancer who disguised himself as joy in State Farm commercials. The Los Angeles Clippers are all the way down to 43.5 from the happy, happy sunshine days where darkness actually reigned. Reed Forgrave, what do you – by the way, let me just say
– No Schadenfreude there. None.
Let me just say, you talk DeAndre Jordan disdain. He wants to go home. Not only wants to go home, there's no state income tax in Texas. 6% of millions of dollars, and having lived in California, that's like a 13, 12, 11% tax swing for that guy, right? It cost him money. And then he's like, deuces, I'm going to Texas. Like, what? What do you mean? All right. Which is nothing which has to do with this topic. I just wanted to bring it up. Los Angeles Clippers, 43.5.
I just want to see how State Farm is going to deal with this situation, because it could be some really funny commercials. I'm going to take the under because I do not believe in Blake Griffin, and he is this team. He's going to be having some point guard duties, which is just bizarre to me. It's going to be a lot of primary ball handling for him. I think this team has some serious dumpster fire potential. I'm taking the under, my friend.
Totally disagree. I think they win 62 games behind Sam Decker's first ever 30-30 average of a season. they're going to be so bad. They're going to be. And by the way, I think that Doc is vastly overrated as an X's and O's head coach. I think he's a remarkable manager of people and personalities. But I think it's interesting that he was able to, for a time, manage Rondo, maybe the most difficult personality at point guard in the game, and he couldn't manage Chris Paul. The reports came out after Paul left that he had basically had a falling out with Doc. That means that he was spewing his frustration and his, you know, all that stuff almost certainly in that locker room. When you lose a locker room, when you get humiliated as a coach, when you get undermined as a coach, even when the guy that undermined you leaves, it is hard to have that same sort of level of respect. So I think the thing that makes Doc best at his job is going to be tarnished a little bit in that locker room. I think that matters. I'm with you on Blake Griffin. He's not reliable. He's not healthy. Austin Rivers is certainly better than I gave him credit for, but I don't think he is an everyday point guard. I'm not that big of a Lou Williams guy. It's a close call for me because they're still full of talent. I love DeAndre Jordan as a defensive rim protector, even though people do not think he's a great player relative to sort of the expectations of the old day, the old guard. The old guard is gone. I'm going under.
The Rockets won 55 games last year. They traded for half the Rockets roster when they traded Chris Paul. So I'm going to go over. I'll take them. I'll take it. If Gallinari stays healthy, they could actually, you talk about addition by subtraction. If those guys didn't like CP3, maybe they'll actually rally and
I love
and
the take
well without it.
Let me ask you one question. Producer Joey, who worked in basketball for 10 years, including most of that in the NBA. When James Harden was on that team last year, how many All-Stars did he play with?
Zero.
Okay, I'm just curious. Denver Nuggets, a team. Why are you making that face, bro? People can't see your face. People can't feel sorry for yourself face.
You didn't need them. They won 55 games.
Give me $1 million duck for that. I want $1 million duck. The $1 million duck. Yeah. Oh, sorry. You have to go through. I'm sorry. I got to stop swearing. That one actually slipped out. Reed Forgrave. People love. Man, I'm gonna be so late for what I have next. People love the Denver Nuggets. What say you at 45 and a half?
I mean, that honestly feels kind of dead on. I am going to take the slight over. The Millsap signing was huge, but
yeah.
Damn, how many power forwards does this team have? It's like they're going to trot out the newfangled five power forward lineup. Yeah, I like this team. I think they need to work on defense, certainly. But Gary Harris just made some money. Just made, what, $84 million contract he just signed? Great that they're locking him down. I like this team more in the future than I do right now. But I'm going to take the slight over with this group.
Reed, I missed it. Did you just say newfangled?
I think I did say newfangled.
Can you give Reed $1 million duck, Joey? I feel like he's earned
the $1 million duck!
Where are you? Such a dumb drop. Where, Joey, where are you at on this?
I like the Paul Millsap signing too, but he is getting older. I don't know if he's good enough to get them more than five wins. They still don't really have a point guard. If Jamal Murray can emerge and become a good point, become a starting point guard for them, maybe. I don't know if that's his position in the league. I'm going to go a little bit under.
I'm going a little under
between 40 and 45. Where they won 40 last year, right? I think it'll be somewhere between there.
Yep, I'm also going under more or less for the same reasons. I just think it's a really, really big jump. And yes, Paul Millsap is going to make his, what, $32 million a year. And it's a nice addition for a team that's got some really interesting young pieces. But he is up in years. He only played, what, 69 games last year? Like, you could start to see a trend of him starting to be hurt a little bit. And not be as reliable. And I just don't see them making the jump for six wins. I don't feel great about it. As with all things Vegas, they're probably right on it. But I am going under. All right, now we get into the good ones, guys. The good stuff. Minnesota T-Wolves. Timberwolves. Last year's Minnesota team won 31 games. This year's team, over under number 48.5. 17.5 jump. Reed Forgrave, to put this in perspective, right? 49 wins would be the two under the Jazz and two above the Thunder last year. What say you of the
two? Do you even need to ask?
I know. What city do you live? What city do you live in?
I live in a beautiful town in the upper Midwest that sometimes gets very cold and is hosting the Super Bowl this year.
I'll be there.
My hometown team, the Minnesota Timberwolves, are going over. I love the Jimmy Butler trade as much as any trade, any acquisition.
The history of America?
In the history of America, yes. This is up there with the Babe Ruth trade. yes. I love this team, man. I love this team. Look, I still think they are probably a year away from really, really making noise right at the top of the Western Conference, but I'm taking the over. I think they will win 50-plus games. I think Jeff Teague is a really nice acquisition for this team as well. And plus, I think Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, playing beside Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson will mean the world to them. Those guys, I believe both of them will make a big jump this year on both ends of the court. So give me the over, brother.
All right, so I'm a little worried, ever so worried about their shooting, to be honest with you. I also love the Teague addition. I think that Andrew Wiggins is not going to be able to daydream through what we like to call defense at this stage of the NBA. I think Jamal Crawford, old though he may be, is actually sort of an important addition to this team for a little bit of spacing. I think Karl-Anthony Towns is the best center by far in the game, something Joey and I talk a lot about. And as much as 17 wins is a huge jump, the two numbers that jump out to me is, despite their shooting woes, and we're not talking about the postseason, right? We're talking about like over-under numbers in the regular season. They were the 10th best offense and offensive efficiency rating last year in the NBA. They were 27th of 30 in defense on a Tom Thibodeau team. Jimmy Butler will change that because of what he does on the floor and what he does in the locker room. Taj Gibson will change that mostly because of what he does in the locker room. It will be a different culture. I think they will make a huge, huge jump. I think this is the team that wins right in the 49-50 range. And I really, really like them to be the most interesting team in the Western Conference this year because of what it projects about who they will be in the future. And that kind of joy, again, like the Lakers, but on a much grander scale, what it's going to feel like to be a part of that team, I think it's going to have a huge difference. It's going to make it a lot easier to take Thibodeau's grinding assault on people's personalities and their lifestyles and their bodies and their energy and everything he demands. I think this is the year that it really sort of clicks. I like the over.
Yeah, I think you almost had me changing my mind talking about the 17-win jump because it's a lot. It is a huge jump, but I'm going to take the over. I think by the end of this, I think Jimmy Butler is a top 10 player in the NBA. I think Cat.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think Cat is probably. I think Cat's probably a top 10 player in the NBA by the end of this year. Actually, they might both be top 10 already. I mean, just talent. Jimmy Butler's so good. When you have two players of that caliber on a team, they're going to be one of the best teams in the West. And the best teams in the West are winning 50 games. So,
oh, and they're also a team that lost so many close games last year. So many close games. I think that'll change this year.
Yeah. What team? What city do you live in?
Upper Midwest.
It's cold. Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City Thunder 51.5. Forgrave.
I don't know. I think I'm going over. Dumpster fire potential. You got to watch out for the Melbourne team. They're really good. I think the Thunder, I'm going over just because, those are three extraordinarily talented players. I think Melo is going to end up fitting in here over time very nicely.
So I think the number is like 44 or like 55, right? I think.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm going to go under. I'm going to be the contrarian. I'm going to doubt strongly what they can do, and I'm going to be more than prepared to give myself a really hard time if and when they win a lot more games than 51.5 for all the reasons I've sort of outlaid and will continue to outlay here on the Flagrant 2 podcast with Bill Ryder and Reed Forgrave that you should subscribe to on iTunes and rate affectionately with 5 stars. Joseph?
I'm having trouble getting last night's game out of my head. The three quarters of it that I watched, it gave me real concerns. But like Reed said, you can't put too much stock into a preseason game. Man, they won 47 games last year without talent, with just Russ. I'm going to go a little bit over, as hesitant as I am. there's a lot of bad teams in the league this year, so I think they're going to get some easy wins because of it. But it's going to be close. I'm going to go a little over.
You guys are going to have to do a two-person rap album called Death by Mermaid at the end of the season, because you guys have been drawn in by the siren song that is Mello and PG, only to be slashed to pieces by their selfishness and lack of ball movement. Siren song. All right, I almost swore again. San Antonio Spurs, 54.4, which isn't right because I don't understand how a .4 works. So I'm going to take that to a typo on Westgate and go, yo, I was going to go over, but a .4. 54.5, San Antonio Spurs, Reed Forgrave.
They won 61 games last year. And yet, gosh, it's so stupid to doubt the Spurs. I think I'm going to take the under. I'm an idiot. I apologize. But, I mean, what, a point guard situation of DeJounte Murray or Patty Mills? I mean, that seems like a problem to me. So, yeah, I'm going under on the Spurs. It's we all do it. It's the dumbest thing you can do, going under.
Greg Popovich is the Bill Ryder of the NBA, taking hapless talent and turning it into podcast gold on his team.
You like that?
Kind of. No, turning into gold, like $1 million gold, like golden eggs.
I think Popovich is too good, and I think I'm actually a little worried about the Spurs. A little worried about the Spurs in the postseason because of the tanking rules and how they affect rest rules and how they affect the ability to do what Popovich has done. But in the regular season, I just think he's going to find a way to make it work. He's too good. He's too good a coach. I still think LaMarcus Aldridge can get there. Kawhi Leonard, forget top 10 player, I think might be a top 3 player in the NBA. Absolutely a top 5 player. And if you're talking best two-way players in the game, he is the best two-way player after LeBron James, although he's going to play a ton of minutes. It's a huge, huge, as you said, Reed, dive from last year. I think that it's going to be the over. Again, they won 61 games last year. They always do it quietly. I learned this like 7 years ago. I doubt Greg Popovich and my own stupidity. I am dumb, but like a dog that's beat over the head with a newspaper, rolled up newspaper, I too can learn. I'm going the over.
Beat your dog, dude?
Yeah, it came out real bad. I beat your
hell,
dog.
Dude. What the hell?
But I gotta be honest. I don't own a dog. I used to beat your dog. Fair. Hey, no. Animal rights people. I love animals.
My dog was awesome. I love my dog.
That dog.
Not well behaved. Not well behaved, but awesome.
Reflected a certain lack of. Okay. Joey?
Train. I'm going over. I think they can win right around what they. I think they can do right around what they did last year. Tony Parker's getting old, anyways. I think it was Patty Mills' time to probably become the starter there. All he has to do is get it up the court and get him into their offense. He's a just about 40% shooter from three for his career. The way they move the ball and space it, he'll be fine. They picked up some. I mean, Joffrey Laverne is an underrated signing for them. A stretch, he can play. Be a 4 or 5 for them. He's a shooter. And Bryn Forbes, watch out.
Joey, give me a number.
For Bryn Forbes. That's the headline here.
You went over?
Yeah, over.
I don't mean to rush it, but I got to rush it. Houston Rockets, 55.5. They won 55 games last year. They added my best friend in the league, Chris Paul, someone I'm close to on an emotional level. That's not true. Reed Forgrave.
Give me the over, man. I love this. I love this. You got two of the best point guards in the league playing the same backcourt. Give me the over. I think this team could win 60. You are probably going to disagree.
I think they could win 62. I think they won't. I'm going to let Joey go first. Joey?
I'm going to go a little bit over 56. I think they'll be right around where they were last year.
You're going to call your shot?
Yeah, I'm going 56.
So I know I should go over. I almost typed over. I want to say over. I know they have the potential. I have a lot more faith in them than I do Oklahoma City. And I think D'Antoni's idea on paper to every minute of the game have one of the three best point guards in the NBA on the floor fresh. And for a large chunk of those minutes, 20 of those minutes, to have them on the floor together makes a lot of sense. It's really interesting. But I do think that Mikhail's criticisms on Harden are rooted in something. I have seen and I've reported on what Chris Paul is like in a locker room, and I know Mike D'Antoni, and I did the most awkward hour-long. Remember the read that interview?
Trail.
Yeah, it was real awkward. I used to bump into the movie theater. He's brilliant. He doesn't manage difficult personalities well. I'm going to go under by a game. I think they win 54. I'm going under, and I don't feel good about it. Last but not least, the Golden State Warriors, 67.5, Reed Forgrave.
Over. It's amazing to even say that about a team that's slotted at 67.5. But, yeah, man, I mean, I think this team could break their own record. I really do.
I think that is absolutely right. I'm going over. I know that 67.5 is such a big number. All it takes is like, but I'll say this, man. If Steph or Durant got hurt, they could still hit the over.
I know. That's what makes it insane. Like, both those guys clearly have had injury issues in the past, and yet they're so deep. It doesn't, I mean, it matters, but it doesn't really matter.
I mean, in most situations, right? Like, in most situations, you would, if you're putting real money down, which I have been known to do, you would factor in, like, on a high number, like, what is the percentage that somebody gets hurt, right? And it doesn't affect history. It doesn't affect their championship run. They, you know, they missed 3 weeks in December, and all it matters is, like, things like this. Durant last year. But they won a bunch of games. Like, they're too talented. It's the over. Joseph?
Yeah, if KD or Steph goes down, you got Swaggy P. Over.
Swaggy P. I can't wait to see them play the Nets. The Swaggy P, we'll do an over-under. We'll do a special on that, like when it's Swaggy P against D'Angelo Russell, and just like over-under on Swaggy P scoring 20 points. I'm taking the over, by the way, in that game.
Look, the reunion of Swaggy P and JaVale McGee. The reunion. They're back together. It's going to be incredible. That's the best side story on that team.
Guys, I love doing the podcast. It's number 4. It is a lot of fun. Reed is on Twitter at Reed Forgrave and at Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce. I'm on there at Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. I also have a radio show weeknight 6 to 10 Eastern Time, CBS Sports Radio. You can check out Reed as a national magazine writer, Beyond the Realm of Sports, most recently, or upcoming, I should say, in the New York Times Magazine. This Sunday, it's a beautiful piece of work. You should check it out. We will be here 3 times a week on a regular basis. Rip Hamilton and Roger Bell will be part of it. Hope you will give us a nice review on iTunes, pointing out that Reed carries me on a regular basis. And remember, don't give up on Lance Stephenson and the calling card of Hulk everywhere. The $1 million duck! All right, guys. See you later.